Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Brighton, and you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, many of the nation have recently been enjoying sporting competitions such as the Euros and Wimbledon. What do you think is the most boring sport, and what would you do to make it more exciting? Okay, here comes the show, and remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast with myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dame Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Hello!
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked, and we are talking everything from...
We are talking everything from Sarah from Brighton's question, what do you think is the most boring sport, and what would you do to make it more interesting? Dane, boring sports? Golf often comes to mind for me. I don't want to watch golf. Yeah, I don't want to watch...
I was thinking the same thing, and I think... Because you've got crazy golf, but it's really small scale. So there should be like normal golf, but with crazy golf stuff in there. So you're like,
okay,
Tiger Woods is on the green, and they've released the actual Tigers. Let's see if you can hold his concentration and stuff like that.
Yeah, that could be good. Or it could all be on, I was thinking actually like the balls could be on fire maybe. That could add to like...
The balls could be on
and
fire.
And when you get it in the hole, there's a big explosion. And that would be quite exciting.
So, yeah, on a minefield. That's what I mean. There's crazy golf. And I just think we just take different places. Like, you know, it could be like a landfill, or it could be just over a shark tank. And you've got to like hit it over the shark tank and stuff. And someone's like, oh, that's in the rough. That is not going to be good for him.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, it could be a little bit like The Running Man, the Arnold Schwarzenegger film.
That's not a sport. That's the problem, is that's not a sport yet.
Sure.
Now,
sure.
If that was a... We're not that far off. We're pretty close because we've got like YouTube fights and we've got I'm a Celebrity. So you just have to combine those and you'll have The Running Man.
Okay.
But the most boring sport that's out right now, I would say, is probably golf. But then I also find most winter sports kind of boring as well.
Yeah, but that's because just because we don't have any idea about them, do we? Whereas golf is literally just boring.
I mean, the turnoff for me is the snow.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, sport is supposed to be exhilarating and fun. It's just like when people go, I'm going on a skiing holiday. I'm sorry. You're going on holiday in the snow? Okay. Sounds
anyway,
insane to me.
Suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions about boring sport or whatever you want, Sarah.
Or exciting sports. No sport, no question, is too boring or too fast-paced. And if you like the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify and you'll never miss an episode. Or you can subscribe to us on Acast, the world's biggest podcast network, where you can hear all of the very special questions being asked and answered by our very special guests. With that being said, on today's show is an English television and radio presenter. She is much loved for presenting the BBC Radio 1 Extra Weekend Breakfast Show, CBBC Saturday Mashup, and can currently be heard entertaining the masses on Heart Radio with over 1.2 million listeners. She's also a big advocate for improving the lives and education of young people and has played an influential role in the BBC's apprenticeship and outreach schemes. And she can see so well, she can find your iPhone on a motorway. Please welcome to the show, Ms. Yasmin Evans.
That's a great intro.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I write them all. And sometimes people look quite quizzically at us as they're being read out. But you were delighted. You were delighted, Yasmin.
We call Howard. Howard is the producer and the podcast florist. He likes to give flowers as much as possible to all of our guests. So please accept this bouquet.
I will always accept flowers, actually. Always.
I hate flowers.
So thank you very much.
Because my wife isn't very good at keeping them going. Neither am I. And they're just basically dead flowers.
You need a plant.
Yeah, you need a plant, Howard. You know, you can buy flowers that come with a vase straight already.
Yeah.
And then you just put the food in, basically.
Right.
Just get a plant. Okay.
Get a plant. Or get like a cactus. I think you and your wife are people. That way it's minimal effort. Everyone's happy and, you know, still green. Okay. I love flowers.
The cacti couple. Don't you want to be that?
Are there any sports that you think are boring, Yasmin? I'll go back to Sarah's question.
Do you know what? Because I don't like sports in general,
right,
I kind of... I kind of like to watch them because I just feel like it's a new experience every time. I've been told the offside rule probably about 267 times, to be precise. I probably would find like snooker. Is snooker a sport?
It is officially a sport.
Is it a sport though? See, Yasmin, I'm with you on this. There's some things that shouldn't be considered sport. Like, first of all, if you can wear a tuxedo to a sport, is it a sport really? I don't think so.
Yeah, I need like a like movement for sport. I want to be like see sweat
yeah,
for sport.
Probably some kinesthetics. Also, yeah. I don't know how I feel about equipment sports because I feel like when it involves equipment, there's like a higher barrier to entry. So if you can't afford, say, like a snooker cue or a paraglider or a curling majig, then...
I mean, all sports have equipment though.
Yeah, but
running.
With running, you don't really need it. But football, for example, you could have one ball and you could have 48 people and they can still play football.
So everyone can chip in.
Yeah, everyone can chip in. It's just a lot more inclusive. Whereas... not everybody can afford a surfboard or not everybody can afford a snooker cue or a tennis racket or a pair of skis.
True.
So I think there's that class divide. So I think I'm just more closer to the proletariat when it comes, especially because I feel like those sports involve feats of human strength that allow people to transcend their social strata. Whereas if you can't afford a canoe to get good at rowing, you're never going to be able to kayak.
I mean, the examples that you're using are like extreme.
Listen, I'm just saying.
If you can't afford a javelin, then...
some people can't afford a javelin.
I mean, I don't even know how much javelins cost.
They're not cheap.
I can imagine they're not.
And I reckon now with the cost of living crisis, they've probably gotten more expensive. Olympic training is expensive. That's why like a lot of Olympians between like Olympic games, they
about
do 50 stuff like
quid for a javelin, just in case anyone's interested.
50 quid?
That's expensive.
For something that I have to go and pick up when I throw it. That's outrageous.
And where do you store it? Because it's like massive.
Also, it's a bit dangerous, isn't it? So, you know, that's not an easy one to walk around with.
But then you've got to keep the javelin sharpened as well. So
you got a sharpened javelin?
I'm sure you do. You probably do. Do you think?
Probably.
They must do.
At this confusing point in the process, I'm going to suggest it's probably time for a question.
This conversation is much more interesting than the games themselves. But, you know.
It is probably time for a question, though, isn't it, Dane? As the format of this show does dictate.
Absolutely. Miss Yasmin Evans, our very esteemed guest, we'd like to invite you to ask the first question to myself and Howard. It can be any question you would like. And then Howard would like to pose a question to you after that, which we'd like to discuss for about 15 minutes or some change as well. And then in an interesting twist of fate, I will like to throw the javelin back to you and pose a question to you. And then we'd like for you to tell our listeners so they can find out about your good works, past, present and future. How does that sound?
That sounds phenomenal.
Oh, and the floor is, of course, yours.
So my question is, what is your favourite history story?
Ooh, go on. What? Nice. What has inspired this question in you? Maybe you've got your own lurking there, Yasmin.
I was hugely into history at school. And then when I left school and started to like look more into just history of people, like I just love to Google a person also and like look at like where they come from. Like I'm talking about celebrities, not just people, you know, in general. That's a bit stalkerish.
Just regular people.
Just regular people. What's your name? Passport number?
Right. That is a show, though. It's called Who Do You Think You Are? So that's cool as well. Yeah. Like Ancestry.com is the same thing.
I'm obviously not saying that I came up with that idea. Good. But I could just get stuck in a hole of like people's history, like celebs' history. So knowing that there isn't just this much of history that we're taught at school and a specific type of history note, I would love to know what your favorite history story is, because I feel like when I ask that, it either sparks people to research, you know, something that they've never learned before or that they've already done it and it's stuck with them. So it's a question, but it's also a lesson for me.
Yeah, it's interesting, right, Dane? I mean, I would tell you right now that there's a lot of the big history stories. I got into this conversation the other day, which is sometimes it's a bit of a weird thing that I'll get, as a Jewish man, right? I'll get into conversations with people who are like, God, I read this this really amazing thing involving World War II and the Holocaust. And I just have to kind of stop them and go, oh, it's a bit awkward, mate, because I'm really not that interested. It's just, I just, you know. And that's not...
Howard, we were recording on the Shabbat, and that's what you said.
But I tell you what, I don't know what made that happen to me. Like, obviously, I completely respect every element of that story and no disrespect to it at all. But for whatever reason, from maybe as a child, I just was turned off from being interested in it, found it upsetting. I don't know what happened as a kid. But now, you're just not going to find me picking up the next great Holocaust story. You know, and there's a million, literally, there's amazing stories there.
At least 6 million stories.
There you go. And this guy was telling me this story, and I was like, yeah, I'm out. It's fine. I'm glad you like it, but I'm not into that.
It's also, like, not your responsibility. I think, like, if people ask me, like, oh, so what do you think about the situation with George Floyd in America? It's like, fucking go Google it. Like, why have you come to me to ask about that, like, specific moment in time? Yeah. It's like, it's not, sometimes I think when it comes to conversations like that, which are more often than not really deep, you kind of like have to unpack their reason behind it, which can be really exhausting.
Why are you being forcibly trauma bonded to another story?
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that. And I also get, and Howard makes a very valid point as well, is that, because it's very strange that people use that as the jump off point to discuss human history with you. So you're kind of like, why does it have to be this story of trauma? So, yeah. I mean, there's a number of different stories, I suppose, and I enjoy them for different reasons, but the one that sticks out the furthest, and that's kind of based on what you were both saying, would be the story of the Haitian Revolution.
Right.
Again, there seems to be a subtext of identity politics when you're discussing history anyway. So as you said, people go, how do you, Yasmin, feel about George Floyd? As if, like, you know, you're the go-to and that your interpretation of that history will be different to anybody else's. And I guess the same with Howard. Like, Howard, did you know that at Auschwitz, you're like, yeah, I probably do know. Mm. Why? I mean, the overview, I pretty much know. So with that in mind, the reason why I enjoyed the Haitian Revolution is because, I guess, in this tendency for people to have to try to attribute an aesthetic to history, it's like a good story. Like, Black history it's a very reducing term, and it kind of really only references, I guess it's a very poor way of trying to reference, or I suppose try to make some weird pastiche of African history or the history of indigenous peoples from outside of the Western Hemisphere, when that really, if we are looking at what African history is, and I'm supposed to identify with that politically, then it's not really the entirety of it. So the Haitian Revolution is a positive one because, well, they won, first of all. It's nice to have a happy ending when there were so many of these stories about trauma that involve ancestors or people who might share a political identification. And I think it's an important one that can be, and I think that's the thing with history. I think the way that human beings tend to chronicle history, a lot of time we like to do it from the perspective of a triumph over adversity or a triumph of the human spirit. And that's normally why we use history as a reference to give ourselves a sense of grounding, or, you know, to give some relevance to our background or to attach ourselves to that ongoing journey. So this is one of the better examples of it where, you know, you have a man who is a former slave to Saint Louverture, who is up against both the French Empire, actually Napoleonic forces, as well as the American and British empires, alongside Jean-Jacques Dessalines, was able to outsmart all of these parties and resulted in Haiti being the first nation to liberate itself from chattel slavery. I mean, the story, when you hear the whole expanse of it, it doesn't seem to turn out great initially. But in the same way, there was like Star Wars and everyone was like, hooray! And then many years later, it was like all over again with The Force Awakens. So obviously, human history is always going to have some level of flux, whether it's long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away, or not as long ago in the Caribbean. But I like that story, because I guess it has a happy ending. And that might become, that probably comes from the fact that a lot of the time when we see history represented, there is like a stylized element to it. So we try to kind of give it that same kind of stylized aesthetic when we recollect it, because like, I use Star Wars as a reference because people are like, oh, Star Wars, remember those good old days? And I'm like, it's a fucking war. There were no good old days. It's water. Like, there's nothing good about water at all.
I just have to say, I've never watched a Star Wars in my life. So.
Say it with your chest then. Don't cover your face, Yasmin. Sorry, what was that statement?
I've never watched Star Wars. I know, like, the premise. Oh, I've watched the one with Darth Maul.
There you go. That's the first one.
With the red face.
Yeah, that's the first one. So
it's not the first one, though, is it?
No, but it, chronologically, it's the first one.
I know, but it's not the, first one. Of the shit, like, that's ones. Why I don't like this, because, like, it's the first one. I'm pretty sure I've seen an older version, but that's not.
Yeah,
so I just don't like the way that my brain is very simple. I need, like, first one.
I mean, that kind of leads to the question you're asking as well, because a lot of people, and that's the thing, when people look at certain aspects of history, depending on how that history resonates with them, then they might want to learn more about it. So in the first run of films from what would be called episodes 4 to 6, which would be A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, then those were those resonated so much with audiences that people were like, well, what happened before that? And what happened when, I guess, Darth Vader was Anakin Skywalker? And people loved that so much that then people were like, but then at some point, then studios realized that people loved that nostalgia so much and wanted to see so much of a world behind it. Then you get, like, you know, The Force Awakens and then The Last Jedi and then The Rise of Skywalker. But I think, I mean, if one thing it shows is that human beings, irrespective of what point they are in their history, seek particular themes when it comes to recanting history as well. So when you look at some of the new Star Wars motion pictures, obviously they are retelling and there are new characters which are supposed to be having their own journeys, but are very similar to the ones that we met with the first outing as well, because obviously those historic themes are... they resonate with people so much that they're like, yeah, just tell the story again, kind of, sort of. Oh, one more question for how it goes to this history.
Go on.
Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes, but please don't quiz me on it. Like,
Because you realize that's all the same company. So there's nowhere to go. There is no wiggle room here. You watch cinema. There's like 30% of cinema right now.
Don't quiz me on it, but watch it. The premise, cool. Know what's kind of going on. But,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Don't fall behind, no. Because then you'll be in a Star Wars situation.
Yeah.
Howard, your story of history that you enjoy?
This is really ruining this Marvel quiz I've got lined up for Yasmin, really. But other than that, one of my favorite stories, I think, if I'm honest, I was kind of racking my brains about it. And I actually think a lot of my favorite stories come from music, really.
Okay.
I'm really interested in the history of music. It's this thing that existed for centuries. And then, you know, obviously had this boom when people could own it at home in that way. And what are we talking about? The 50s? Kind of 50s more? I suppose it's around that time, really. So, like, I just find there's so many great stories. One of my favourites is, I'm a big Bob Dylan fan. And one of my favourite stories is that the whole thing. I don't know if you know about the fact that he found Jesus. I don't know if you know this, guys, but... Right, this is great. It's kind of weird because obviously when people think of Bob Dylan, they think of, you know, obviously he's a Jewish guy who in the 60s wrote these songs that everyone loved, and then he's kept going for 60 years, you know, which is pretty impressive. But like his life was like in this massive, he'd had a divorce, he'd written a good album after the divorce, to be fair, but he was just in this kind of like, nobody knew what was going to happen to Dylan. He was slowly kind of becoming a bit unfashionable. And then he was on stage at this gig. This is the story he tells, anyway. He's at this gig and someone throws a crucifix onto the stage, right? And he bends down and picks it up. And he says at that moment that he felt like Jesus coursing through his veins, and then proceeded to spend the next, I think it's 3 years... writing Jesus-based Christian music, which when you see the footage of it, which I can happily share with the listeners and yourselves, it's like, you know, this kind of fuzzy-haired, Jew-froed, like, guy with this kind of gospel black singer choir. But the weird thing is that some of the music, you know, which I would say that most people will not recognise as his great works, is pretty good. It's really good. It's really good. But it's just a brilliant thing about that story is that basically nobody knew, right?
Yeah.
So he picked up this thing. Dylan goes off, you know, he goes and gets back in the studio. Nobody's obviously there. But then he releases the music. He goes on, I think, David Letterman to kind of play the first couple of tracks. And everyone's like, oh, this is this is interesting, isn't it? What's this that he's doing? And it's like, oh, sorry, is he singing about Jesus? Like, and it, just nobody had any idea, which I suppose we've got used to people doing with, you know, in terms of Kanye West. But he quickly got into Jesus, didn't he?
Very
quickly. But anyway, that's one of my favourite stories from history, is the time that the kind of Jewish musical icon, Bob Dylan, had spent 3 years. And then I don't know what made him stop, but he was like well into that.
Love that.
Yeah, there you go. It's not a bad one, is it?
No,
what have you
not.
Got, Yasmin? Have you got some tale from history? Have you got one lined up?
Mine's at the moment quite music related, because I watched the new Baz Luhrmann Elvis film, and it really got me sort of like diving back into like the mother of rock and roll and where rock and roll stemmed from.
So, oh, nice one.
I'm so deep into Sister Rosetta Tharpe's life right now.
That's cool.
I have listened to her music probably years ago now. My mum's really into like old school soul and R&B and like way back rock and roll, sort of when it was like, you know, Sister Rosetta Tharpe and all the mothers of rock and roll that kind of like started rock and roll. And I think a lot of people forget about where rock and roll started, because yeah. I'm not really sure if anyone really, I mean, I'm speaking for a very large population, the world, but I'm not sure if we kind of have ever really like delved deep into it unless like prodded to do so, for example, myself. But I'm obsessed with reading about her life and how, like, I'm watching like video footage or like people portraying her and how she used a guitar and how like friggin' amazing she is. And Yola, who is an artist herself from the UK, from London, she is her in the new Elvis film. And I was speaking to her recently about how she had to really kind of prepare for the role to be Sister Rosetta Tharpe and what she had to do to play the guitar. And she just learned a whole new rock and roll world as a black woman for this film. It's like one of the most amazing stories about her. She was born Rosetta Newbin, but was married. Her husband's surname was Tharpe, so that she took that on. And this, like, the first recordings that she did in the 1930s are like so raw and so like she's got this like real like raspy, like, I'm gonna say like booming voice, like it just takes over you. And just like her life of traveling, her mum was into music and she played alongside like people in her family, but just like the blues rhythm of rock and roll, reading about that is like blown my mind recently. I just absolutely love it. Like, when I say obsessed, I have about 16 tabs open. I get really like into recently. Like recently I was really getting into like JFK, and like, I don't know how it happened, but I'd gone from Arnold Schwarzenegger to JFK because he's
Jackie Onassis with the link there.
Yeah. So and I will spend hours.
I've been in a number of rabbit holes
get me, like they take me. And then as soon as I get like a little bit pissed off, I'm like, right, I'm going to have to close these windows down.
Yeah. But that's a really, really good point of human history. It's a very pivotal point in history. JFK to Bobby Kennedy to Malcolm to Bay of Pigs to Sam Giancana to Marilyn Monroe, like that's a big rabbit hole there.
Scary rabbit hole as well.
It really is. Oh yeah.
But the rabbit hole of Sister Rosetta Tharpe is not scary at all. It's like, you know, your Aretha Franklin's, Chuck Berry, I mean there's countless others. Like, her career spanned 4 decades. So like there's so much, like I just think she's an unmatched artist.
We've had a lot of good historical stories, some very different ones, right, Dane? Thank you very much for bringing that question to us.
They're all good, but I think that the problem is that we try to compartmentalize history rather than... No, because it should all be a thing of all of these things are a part of the whole human journey. And I think if we were to kind of see us all as contributing towards human history rather than trying to compartmentalize achievements and different points, then, you know, and separate different types of history when all of this is human history, I think that it would change the outlook. So, for example, Howard, like, what might be the traumatic aspects of Jewish history should be a traumatic experience for everyone, irrespective of if they are Jewish, because as human beings, like, we understand how grief and loss works. And I think if we all treated all history as a part of human history, then we would all want to contribute to a more prosperous future. I hope that doesn't sound too wanky.
I like that word.
That's my point, though, right? Mm-hmm. That, like, you know, we all, human beings, should all marvel at the fact that Sister Rosetta Tharpe was able to create a sound at a time where both her sexual orientation as well as her race would have held her back. That's an amazing feat for a woman to do in a Western patriarchy.
And just, yeah,
as a creative in general. Yeah. So,
good question.
Thank
with
you.
Lots and lots of different bits to it, right, Dave?
It was either that or what's your favourite sandwich, so.
We've done that. We've done that before, right. I think.
Okay. Mine's was McChicken, by the way.
McChicken. Fuck off. Go on. That
sandwich.
Doesn't count.
It's not
that's
a
burger.
Sandwich.
That's a
Someone's
burger.
Someone's judgment on this podcast.
That's a burger, Dane. It's a burger, not a
100%
sandwich.
100% a burger. Okay. Anyway, moving on.
My goodness.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, my question this week relates to the fact that when I was looking at my calendar today, I was looking forward to talking to you, Yasmin, and then I was like, oh, look, I forgot about that. I've got to go to a parents' evening for my two-year-old child. What the fuck are they going to tell me about this two-year-old, right? Because, like, he shits himself really well. Okay, we all know that. He eats the food they give him, and he likes cars, and occasionally he hits people. Now, that's a child, as far as I'm aware. That's all two-year-old children, pretty much. And I was thinking, God, it's just pointless, isn't it? What a pointless experience that I'm going to go and do. I'll happily do it, but it's pointless. But what it made me want to ask you guys, what do you remember about actual parents' evenings? Because they do have some kind of pertinence when you're older and you're actually different from just a blobby child, two-year-old thing. What were your parents' evenings like? Were they important to you? Did they mean anything to you? What do you remember of them, Yasmin?
Howard, don't glance over that he hits people thing, by the way. I just want to...
Sure, we're working on that.
He shits himself and he hits people. That might be a longer meeting with the teacher.
That sounds like he's doing a dirty protest. I think you need to have a really long think about what's going on. Well, I would say don't underestimate your kid. Right, okay, fine. My niece is like a sponge. She literally, like, honestly, she talks to me like I'm an adult, and it really freaks me out. My parents' evening was just pretty much every time my mum and biological father sitting together next to each other on a chair, which gives me major anxiety because they split up when I was 18 months old. So that in itself is fucking wrong. Pardon my language.
Yeah.
And for them to both be told that I just don't stop talking, like, she's great, she just doesn't stop talking. My teachers always said, you could be so much better at work, but, you know, she just needs to stop talking. And then look who's got the microphone, making money from it. Yep. Talking all the time. In your face.
Mrs. Who? What was her name?
I can list them all off. I'll list them all off right now.
Yeah, all of them.
We'll tag them on Instagram. Yeah,
each and every one of them.
But I mean, for me, as someone who I'm not incredibly smart, as in on paper educational. I really had to revise to soak it all in. So for me,
not educated, academic. Yeah.
I was not an academic person. Like, I had to really, really revise hard, and I would have like any type of highlighter pen and all the notes and everything like that. And so parents' evening for me was definitely something to, like, it's more from parents, isn't it? Obviously. It's their evening. It's more for my mum to just check up that I can read. Because I would be at home like, I don't know what this means. Like, what's 4 plus 4? And she'd be like, it's 8. It's fine. You can do this. Yeah. But for me, it's just probably a bit traumatic parents evening. What with having the parents there together and also just realizing I wasn't doing so well at school.
Yeah, I wasn't doing very well at school and I dicked around a lot. I was I used to mess around a lot and...
Hit people and shit yourself, maybe?
No. My father likes Don.
I was never very violent. No, I was never very violent.
The crapple doesn't fall too far from the pea, as they say.
I never did any. I was just stupid. I just used to arse around, joke around, and wasn't very good at the academic stuff either. So, you know, I was always dreading it. I was thinking, God, if Dylan, my two-year-old son, knew that we were going to talk about him, what he'd have to say about it.
What are they going to tell you? What are they going to tell you about?
These two, nothing. They've got nothing to tell me.
I guess it's like different situations or how he's kind of like interacting with other people that you don't know, because most of the time he would have you and your wife there and other people, his mates, that you know. But maybe it's... Oh, maybe it's like a bit of gossip as well. Like, your son's been messing around with Pete, and you think he shits and punches people. He's been influenced by Pete, just so you know. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Okay.
Fill you in a bit. Yeah.
Could be that.
Well, I hope he doesn't go to school with anyone called Pete.
I'll happily report back to the fan base of Dave.
Well,
they
don't
want
to know how it turns out. To be honest.
Imagine if he's been expelled. Suspended. What's he? Because I always used to be like, oh my God, I'm going to be in so much trouble. Because like the other day I did this stupid thing and this teacher and I got detention and, you know, it was all that stuff, right? But like, I don't know.
I just always thought it was a bit like, why do we want to go back to school after we left at 3 o'clock that day?
Good point, yeah.
Like, and always like, short Mary Simon saying this, my mum's a late person. So we'd have to book like the latest one anyway.
Oh,
like,
that's always the worst one when you're in the playground waiting for them. All the other kids are like, well, Bernie has been.
No, like I think people used to worry. Like, is your mum actually coming to pick you up? I think so today, yeah. So we would have the last appointment at the parents' evening. We'd still be late and there'd be no one else there. You've got to sit on the chair waiting for the next family to finish talking. Then you like go up to the fold out table that's from Amazon, 10 quid, like in the sports hall. Like, I've just been here 4 hours ago. Why am I at school in the evening? That's weird for me. That's weird.
It is a travesty.
What was yours like, Dane?
Parents evening. I guess it varied depending on parent, because my mum used to go to most of them and she'd be late as well, but she'd be working late. And, it'd be fine though. She'd definitely make an effort. My mum used to show up in like a Burberry Mac for like, that she got from like the Hackney outlet.
Nice.
And she'd make it a bit of a fashion show. So she'd show up in like with her little satchel and that. And it'd be cool because I think me and my friends would be like, so the parents' evening for a start was just a really a point of ridicule, because some of my friends' parents were dressed up in ceremonial garb as if they were going to their child's wedding, as opposed to going to a parents' evening just to make the effort, because I guess it's an educational setting.
Mm.
Some people's mums would show up in full ceremonial garb, which was obviously a point of ridicule. Then we'd obviously have jokes. I went to a boys' school, went to a grammar school, and so there'd also be jokes about whose mum is the sexiest.
Right.
Whose
was, to have interest?
I don't really remember, to be honest. I was, like Yasmin, way too focused on the fact that I'm in school when the sun goes down, which to me is a travesty and an atrocity of human history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I believe that the covenant is that I behave myself between the times of 8:30 to 3:15 on the basis that when 3:15 comes around, then there are boundaries. Now this is my time. Mm-hmm. So there's a window of 3:15 to about 5:30 between my commute home and my parents coming home from work, where I again have to fall under their rules as authoritarians. Mm-hmm. But that window of 3:15 to like 5:30, that's Dane's time. And then encroaching on that time, I think, is a betrayal of that said covenant. So I'm already being like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, the sun has gone down and I'm still on school grounds. I feel like a reverse vampire. I'm in a dungeon with Kirsten Dunst and the sun's about to rise.
So true. That is so true. Also, I really feel like we could really like erase all of this parents' evening stuff by like just having one meeting with the parent, like the teacher. Like, as if my teacher just met my mum, she would know, and they both would have an understanding that I was always going to behave myself, because if I did not behave myself, I wasn't scared of the teacher or detention. No.
Exactly.
I'm scared of my mum. Hey, I will get B's maximum. I'll be fine and I'll be well behaved. A little bit chatty, but who doesn't like a bit of entertainment in the classroom?
I mean, the whole thing is, and I hasten to inform you of this, Yasmin, that the schooling system as we understand it was actually devised by industrialists in order to prepare us to conform to a life of work.
Mm.
That's why the hours are always exactly the same. That's why you are segregated along the lines of your age and your gender, despite having no mutuality within these parameters to the people you're in class with.
Yeah.
And you are also Pavlovian, in a Pavlovian fashion, conditioned to only respond to the sound of the bell.
Which, and which other establishment does that?
Yeah, exactly, work. And then also
you're prison.
And prison as well, yeah. Oh, no, prison is different because at least in prison, you are guaranteed an hour of exercise every
but
day.
But we don't eat unless the canteen, we eat in the canteen.
Yeah, you have to eat in the canteen.
I'm saying we, like I have been a prisoner. Let me just, it's not we because I have not experienced
it sounds like
that.
You're institutionalized. You've been conditioned. We've all been institutionalized. But that's what I mean. It prepares you for either prison or it prepares you for being working because, you know, the thing is, if you are resistant to the idea of an academic institution, there are no other, despite the fact that you might have other gifts which contribute to society, because all three of us, neither of us work in jobs that you can really come from just academic study, but if you choose to resist or you don't, I guess, or you don't have an affinity with institutionalized academia, then there's no alternative for you. Mm-hmm. And I think my parents probably understood that to an extent. Not that I was going to become a creative, but they, through their own experiences, probably were aware that depending on academic institutions to educate their child alone would just be an unrealistic expectation. Mm-hmm. And even me, to an extent, like even with Parents' Evening, I think I liked Parents' Evening because having my parents there, if I wanted to have discourse with the teacher, was helpful because I was never really, there was never someone that would challenge authority for the sake of a laugh. I would definitely challenge it just for the basis of what's being said, because I was never somebody that could acquiesce to someone saying because I said so. It was never a good enough reason for it or because I'm the teacher. So if a teacher did make an observation, I'd be like, yeah, but... So there would be a discussion, and having my parents, who are quite logical and... they're logical and they're moral people, which can work. That can be good and bad, like in school, when they say like, we're going on a school trip. The children will only need £1.50 a day. My parents are like, here is £1.50 a day, not £1.53, not £2. Exactly what it says. And also, whenever a teacher would go, well, I think it'd be good for Dane to be the only black kid in all of Heidelberg in Germany, it would be educational. My mum would go, well, why do you say educational? Of course I'll send my only son to one of the whitest parts of Western Europe by himself. Of course that's a good idea. And I'd be like, maybe you need to look at more fucking history, like he has been posting that first question, mum. And you can understand why I shouldn't be in bloody Heidelberg by myself. She's like, it's educational, it'll be fine. And all my friends are like, we're going away at summertime. We're going to bloom. Pontins. And I'm like, well, I'm going to Germany, because apparently that's what Caribbean people do.
I just think to conclude this reminiscing of our childhoods through Parents' Evening, I just think the reason you wanted these things exist is for you to check up on the child, right? That's the basic thing for the parent. What's that person up to? And with this nursery that he goes to, I've got this app here, right, that literally tells me, so today he pissed himself at 8:40, then at 10 a.m. he shit himself, and then he had some Weetabix at 10:18.
He made room for that.
Yeah.
So they constantly inform you of your child's bodily functions and what they eat.
That's good.
Yeah,
that is good.
And, you know, he slept at 12 for an hour and a half. And there's a nice picture of him playing with another child at 10:45. So you're like, I know enough.
It's like a Tamagotchi. You've got a Tamagotchi.
There is a similarity, yes.
There you go.
Apart from I can turn a Tamagotchi off.
Can you?
But I think so.
I don't think you can.
Can you turn them off?
No, I think it just dies.
Naturally.
I certainly can't turn off my child.
No.
I tell you what. You lot are worried about Tamagotchis. What the fuck happened to all those Nintendogs?
Don't
remember those.
Don't get in that rabbit hole.
It's time to move on from history to Parents' Evening to whatever entertaining thing Dane wants to pose in his question to wrap up today's show. Segway.
Right. So riding the slipstream of that clean segue, socially on a local and on a national level, I think things have been crazy of late. I think we all have our own individual stories, but based on what happened this week for me. And news I became aware of last week, I'm reminded of a quote from the character Pooh in The Wire. You ever see The Wire?
Mm.
Right. There's a part when I think he's speaking to... I want to get this thing right. Hold on. Pooh said it to Bodhi. they're talking about climate change.
Right.
And one of the characters says, I thought you said the world was getting hotter. And the character in question, Poop, he says, the world is going one way, people another. Yeah, I think it was very profound. So I wanted to say to Yasmin, the world might be getting hotter, but it seems people are getting colder. Do you concur?
Well, because I've not met every single person in the world,
mm-hmm.
I will speak of my experience, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Just put that disclaimer. Obviously, the question is very obvious. But
seems like the world's getting colder all around. Like, for a start, petrol is £2.
Yeah.
British people had a promise that if petrol went to £2 a litre, the revolution begins. And meanwhile, we don't have any yellow jackets like they have in France. We are still having this. So, yeah.
I mean,
I think
there's a lot of meanwhile. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure I have, like, meanwhile etched into my brain, like, stored in the back of my brain for whenever I need to just... Do you know what? I would probably... It's weird. Like, I think, like, I could agree in some instances. However, I really try and surround myself with like-minded people. I sound so fucking cliche, but I'm like, I feel like because I'm like, my mum is my best friend and like I've got an amazing partner and I've got some really, really great friends. And I have conversations with like-minded people. And in that sense, when I have those like-minded conversations, which can be challenging and people challenge and, you know, there is growth happening there. I'm probably more inclined to be like, oh no, I feel like, you know, me and my people are going the same way. However, looking at like the grand scheme of things and looking at my perception of the world, I'd probably agree with that quote. It's hard to elaborate on because I just feel like I'm probably, it's as well with social media, we're so prone to just see in a lot of what we were talking about earlier, like a lot of trauma, a lot of negativity, a lot of like shit. And we do get stuck in rabbit holes. And then sometimes I feel like, are we seeing it because we're looking for it? Are we like scrolling past the good news, the bad news? Like, or are people just more vocal about?
Are algorithms suggesting to us, or is it getting worse? Because I personally feel like I've been resistant to the fact that maybe people are getting worse. People are becoming more aggressive, more apathetic, more sociopathic, more violent. And I think that we are experiencing, or we're beginning to see, the effects of austerity. Obviously, it's something we became aware of for about 2008. And like, you know, 10 plus years later, I really think it's really beginning to set in that very flippantly in discussions. When I was in school, mind you, you know, around the same time as Parents' Evening, I had a friend of mine who used to constantly say that the value of human life is in decline. And I kind of got it. But I think of more recent times, our value of human life has declined substantially. Even on the subject of something like climate change, a year ago, people were all joined in making fun of and ridiculing Insulate Britain.
Yeah.
That was something to make fun of. These idiot people are blocking motorways.
That really, really upset me. And
yeah.
I think I saw people dressing up as them at Halloween. I just thought, that's part of my language. That's fucked. Like, that's so...
Yeah, I'm sure is a function of media manipulation, but it was very interesting that, you know, I recall an interview with one of the leaders of Insulate Britain. He was like, look, I'm not like a protester normally. Like, I'm a retired doctor, but I'm just seeing people I know who can't heat their homes. And so this was just in the space of merely a year, people were making fun of Insulate Britain and people were ridiculing these people for blocking motorways and people were complaining, I can't get to work and I need to get to work and do my job, not realizing that now you fast forward a year and we're at a time now where the elderly and most vulnerable have this, there's this new thing where people have to choose heating or eating as a part of a necessity. And it's like when the problem was brought to the fore, nobody wanted to act. And now we're seeing this change in the same way that like a year or so ago, it would have been a year. And a year or so ago, America, for example, as a nation, seemed very comfortable with the fact, a large majority of them were comfortable with or not uncomfortable enough to act on the fact that the president had a very healthy and overt relationship with the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin. Fast forward a year when a large-scale conflict or a war between Russia and Ukraine has begun, and now we're seeing this strange piece of condemnation from our government when a year ago, this person was the exact same person who had already begun hostilities towards Ukraine by attacking, by cyber attacking their banking system. So for me, it's like, why does it take for things to affect people directly before they give a fuck? In the same way, like 2016, we had a Brexit vote and everyone was like, leave means leave. And now you have Britons who are strangely outraged by the fact that they now have to queue in the longer queue as non-EU citizens because they willfully voted for the removal of their freedom of movement within Europe. And now they're complaining. So I'm just like, well, why the fuck are you not complaining now? Why does it always take for you to happen to somebody directly for us to give a shit?
Because we've been, we're unfortunately in a world that lacks any kind of universal meaning, really. It doesn't mean,
Well, this is the thing, because like I said, we were discussing history in the first question, where it's like, we have a number of examples where we see either regressive ideology that leads to, you know, human suffering and suffering in general, and genocide. And then we see how, you know, collaboration between human beings can produce art, which, exemplifies the best parts of ourselves. So it's like, why the fuck are we not learning from history that, like, all these things, all these acts of aggression towards other human beings and other individuals, all these acts of apathy, like, all of these are contributing brick by brick to our destruction overall. Like, do people not see how bad things are getting? Like, in your personal opinion, has anything happened? You're like, because for me, the £2 petrol thing seems like a small thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't think people understand how bad things are going to get, because £2 per litre of petrol, that was unimaginable maybe 2 years ago.
I always say, like, you know, when people go like, oh, imagine if it was like just, and they'll give like an example, like you say, like probably, oh, imagine if like one day it's going to be £2 a litre or something like that. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Like,
yeah.
People, honestly.
Do you remember, like, when people like go back to Africa and everyone be like, you got to do better than that? And now they're shipping people to Rwanda.
Babe, this is what I'm saying.
And if you don't know Rwanda, listeners, Rwanda, you know, the site of a genocide where you had the most people killed in one scale conflict in the shortest time possible since the Yugoslav War, which was made even more harrowing because a large amount of the killings done in Rwanda were done by machete. So why somebody would think that is a destination for asylum seekers, I don't know. So yeah, what's going on, Howard? I'm trying to channel my inner Bob Dylan right here and do social commentary.
In this time that we're in, at this present moment, you really would hope that your individual interactions also can give you just a little gem of something sometimes.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And it's unfortunate that we are seeing what's happening en masse happen in the small moments as well. So you're like, well, what is going on then? Because is going on? Because I'm just seeing there is literally a war going on out there, and you want to have a silly argument here. You want to divide the diaspora sometimes as well. Like, don't argue against me when we're both fighting for that. Like, it's just, I think those individual moments can really actually be like little breaking points for people as well.
Well, it's important to say that we're doomed, and it's been a great episode. It's been a great episode of the show, and we've run out of time. I wish we could keep talking about that, but we have actually run out of time. It was also almost the metaphor for where we are in civilization. But hasn't Yasmin been a nice guest?
I feel like it was all negative. Just a note.
No, it wasn't. History. We did some happy stuff about.
There are some great people in the world,
evenings.
By the way. There are some wonderful people in.
Yeah, you'll find them at some point. No. I'm sure there's a few. But it's been a good one, isn't it? Oh,
it's definitely been a good one. I hope you've enjoyed yourself, Yasmin.
I have.
Could you let our listeners know where they can find out more about your good works and up to date on your findings from your searches into rabbit holes? Because I think that's a good one.
So across all socials, it's at Yasmin Evans, YASMIN, not a J, not Jasmine, not Yasmin, Yasmin. And you can catch me on
that's a contentious one there, but
I think you need to start your own brand of get some Yasmin rice going. I'd love you to start your own brand of rice to be really popular. I'll talk to your agent
if
after this.
If David Oliver can have jollof rice and jerk rice, you can definitely have Yasmin rice.
There we go. And you can also listen to me on Heart London throughout the week sometimes, but always 12 to 4 on a Sunday.
There you go, listeners. If you think that the world has lost its heart, then at least you can listen to Yasmin riddle the heartfelt songs on Heart FM.
Pick up some Yasmin rice from your local supermarket. It's rice you really want to talk about. I'm going to go and pitch that to your agent. Good luck for the next recall, Dane. What a fun time we've had. And I don't feel depressed about the state of the world from the last question at all. Thanks, Yasmin.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate you both.
Thanks, Yasmin.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste and myself, Howard Cohen. Our guest was Yasmin Evans. You can follow Yasmin on Instagram, at Yasmin Evans. For more from Dane and myself, make sure you follow us on Instagram, at Dane Snaptiste, and at The Howard Cohen. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a question for Dane, make sure you send us a DM on Instagram, at DBQE Podcast, and we could feature you in our next episode. Thanks for listening, guys, and remember, question everything.
Insanity Group.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.